And I'm going to offer up to the beginning of the parak. So the Mishnah says, Hamadiras ishto mile hanoslo, adlamid yom yamid parnas, yasser mikin yotzi vi tinksuva, Rabbi Yehuda omer, bi yisrael chodeshachad yakayim ushnaim yotzi vi tinksuva, bechoein shnaim yakayim ushlosha yotzi vi tinksuva. So comes the Mishnah with the following halacha. Let's say a person makes a neder to not derive benefit from their wife. So the question is, basically, how long is such a neder effective? How long can a marriage last with that type of a neder? So the Mishnah says that up to 30 days, so the marriage can last, and the only thing is the husband has to appoint a third party, a trustee, to support his wife. More than 30 days, then the marriage has to dissolve. He has to divorce her and pay her ksuva. Rabbi Yehuda has a slight caveat. He says it depends if the person is a kohen or not a kohen, because we know that once a kohen divorces his wife, he's not allowed to remarry her, so we give him a little bit more leeway. So when it comes to a Yisrael, we give him a month. And then if after, in other words, he can stay married to her for a month, by the time the second month rolls around, he has to divorce her. For a Kohen, we give him 2 months, we give him a little more leeway to, you know, basically make him change his mind. Hamadiras ishto shelo titom echad mikol haperos yotzi v'tinksuva. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'Yisrael yom echad yakayim shnayim yotzi v'tinksuva. Uvechoin shnayim yakayim shlosha yotzi v'tinksuva. Again, a very similar machlokas. If, let's say, a man makes a neder that his wife shouldn't eat a particular type of a fruit, let's say. So again, the same machlokas. According to the Tanakama, that's grounds for divorce right away. He has to pay her ksuva. Rabbi Yehuda again says it depends. Are we talking about a kohen? Are we talking about a non kohen? Fine. Then the Mishnah says Hamadiras ishto shelo. Then the Mishnah has a further machlokes. What if a man makes a neder that his wife should not, you know, adorn herself or put on a particular type of jewelry? So according to the Tanakhama, that is immediate grounds for divorce. He has to pay up her ksuva. According to Rabbi Yossi, it depends. Rabbi Yossi says if the woman is poor and she's not accustomed to wearing jewelry that often, then the only time that such a neder is an impediment to the marriage is if the husband doesn't put a time frame on. I mean, he says, you're never going to wear jewelry again. Or he just says, you're not going to wear jewelry without specifying for how long. That's grounds for divorce. But if he says, for a month, for a year, for whatever, that's okay. The woman is wealthy, however, and she's more... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Sure.
If I make a neder, Danny Foyer can never have another step.
That's not a valid neder because you don't have control over him. Halacha, husband has certain rights over his wife, right? As we've already spoken about, wife has certain obligations towards her husband and vice versa.
So he has control even over what you can eat.
To a certain respect, again, as we'll talk about and as we mentioned already many times in the past, a husband has certain rights to affirm or annul a wife's neder. So he almost by definition, he has certain rights over the things that she says and whether those things are going to be upheld. So again,
she's a passive.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to see in the Gemara that there may be certain circumstances where maybe she made the neder, but the husband could have annulled it, but maybe he chose to affirm it. Again, we'll get into all the details in a second. But the bottom line is that according to Rabbi Yossi, it just basically depends if the woman is wealthy or not. So if she's wealthy and she's used to wearing jewelry, so then basically any time frame that's longer than a month is considered problematic, and that would be grounds for divorce. Okay, so asks the Gemara, V'chevan de meshubad la, hechi matzi madr la, kol kimine de mafka la, l'shi abudei, v'hasnan, konam she'eni osa l'ficha, So the Gemara says like this. In other words, how does this neder even work in the first place, right? Because there's an idea, as everyone keeps on alluding to, that basically there's this obligation that a husband has towards his wife. So the question is, how does he have the right to say to his wife that you can't do X, Y, and Z? How does that even work? There's a Mishnah at the end of Nedarim that says the following. This Mishnah of Nedarim is actually talking about almost the reverse of our Mishnah, where the Mishnah in Nedarim says, let's say a wife makes a neder, she says that I'm not going to do any work for you. In other words, we know, as we mentioned earlier in the Mishnah, is that there are certain things that a wife has to do around the house, right? Maybe she has to give certain of her wages to the husband. So the wife says, I'm not going to do anything for you. So that neder is completely ineffective. The wife has no right to make such a neder. So the same way the Gemara says that in the Mishnah in Nedarim, we basically ignore her neder and we say, yeah, your neder is meaningless. You don't even have to annul it. Of course, the wife still has to do whatever, you know, household chores she's required to do. Why don't we say the same thing here too? The husband makes all these crazy nedarim that you can't eat this, you can't wear that, so just ignore it. In other words, the wife is entitled to wear what she wants, to eat what she wants, and just say that the nether is thrown out the window and we don't even have to annul the nether. So the Gemara says, no. Ela mitoch sheyachol lomer latzi'i ma'isei adayach b'mzono sayach, nasa ka'omer latzi'i ma'isei adayach b'mzono sayach. The Gemara says that there actually is a scenario in which the husband can make such a nether, namely, where he says to her, or where she says to him, Basically, I'm going to keep my own wages, and you don't have to support me. We've spoken about this idea in the past that a wife, that in theory, a wife is supposed to give her wages to the husband in exchange for the support that he provides to her. But let's say the wife makes more money than the husband does, so then the wife can say, I'll keep my own money, and you don't have to support me. So there are scenarios in which the wife can essentially, cut herself off from the husband, so to speak. So the husband doesn't have to support her or provide for her. So the wife is also not bound to her. So the Gemara says, since in theory one could make such a declaration, that might be the circumstance in the Mishnah. So the Gemara then asks, the im isa lahadu ravuna marav, the amar ravuna marav, yechola isha shetomer lebaila, eini nizonis ve'eini osa, konam shani osa leficha, amai no tzarech lahafir. Lema mitoch sheyechola lomer eini nizonis ve'eini osa, nasa kemisha omeres lo eini nizonis ve'eini osa. So the Gemara says, but hang on a second. If what we're saying now is true, that in theory the wife has this ability to basically cut herself off from the husband, financially speaking, so then the question is, so then of course you're going to need hafaras nedar. Right. Let's say the husband made a neder, the wife can't eat a certain fruit, or the wife made a neder that she's not going to do work around the house. So if you're going to make the argument that the wife is able to cut herself off from the husband, so then of course you need hafaras nedarim. So what's the chiddush of the Gemara? Why is the Mishnah telling me that you have to undo the neder? Of course that's the case, because the wife, as we just pointed out, can cut herself off. So the Gemara says, no. Elo lo tema nase, elo beomer lo tzi'i maise adayach bimzono saich. The Gemara clarifies that it's not enough that in theory the wife could have made such a declaration that she's going to be independent and she's cutting herself off from her husband. She actually has to verbalize that. In other words, if she actually says, I'm going to keep my own wages and you don't have to support me, that's one thing. Then we say that hafara would have been required. However, we don't put words into her mouth. So we don't say that since in theory she could have said it, therefore it's okay. That's not, so the Gemara says she actually has to verbalize it. So the Gemara then pushes back. Ihachi parnas lamala. But if that's the case, that the only time that this neder is going to go into effect is only when she actually verbalizes the declaration. So why then did the Mishnah say that a husband has to appoint a third party or a trustee to support her during those 30 days? So the Gemara says, no, bidala safka. We're talking about a case where the woman did not have enough money to support herself, so the husband had to compensate by appointing a third party to take care of her. So the Gemara says, ibidala safka had a kushin leduchte. But if she doesn't have enough money to support herself, so now we're back to square one. We're back to our original question, which is, So then, if the husband is the one who's taking care of her, so then, of course, he's going to have control of the nedarim. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Ravashi b'misapekes ledvarim gedolim, ve'ena misapekes ledvarim kitanim. It means that the wife has enough money to take care of her basic needs, but not for the extra, luxurious items that maybe she's usually accustomed to. So the Gemara clarifies, hani dvarim kitanim hechidami. What are these smaller items that we're referring to? Ida regila b'hu, haregila b'hu, ve'ilo regila b'hu, parnas lamala. So if she's accustomed to these smaller or luxurious items, so then that should be part of her normal sustenance. That's what's expected from the husband to provide to her. And if it's not what she normally gets, then why are you appointing a third party to provide her things that she's not really accustomed to? So the Gemara says, no, lo tzricha diregila beves nasa vekame galgala bahadei, da amrele adha inna de la adartan galgalina bahadach, hashta de adartan lamatzina di galgal bahadach. The Gemara says as follows, that the case was that this woman, before she was married, was accustomed to these more luxurious items in her father's house, and then her prospective husband came along and said, listen, I want to marry you, but I'm not going to be able to provide you with all these luxurious things that you had. I can only give you the bare essentials. And she said, fine, I'm willing to live a more frugal lifestyle in order to marry you. But she said, that was all true as long as you haven't made all these nedarim against me. Now that you start making all these nedarim against me, she says, I'm not willing to put up with all of your mishigas anymore. So I'm going to go back to my original stance that not only do I want the bare essentials, but I want all the luxurious things that I had back in my father's house. Okay. Then the Gemara asks, umayishna ad lamed yom. So why does the Mishnah give this seemingly arbitrary, demarcation of 30 days? It said, for the first 30 days, the husband can appoint a trustee, and after 30 days, he has to divorce her. Where does that number come from? So the Gemara says, Ad lamed yom lo shame ba inshev la zila ba milsa, tvei shame ba inshev zila ba milsa. So one answer in the Gemara is that 30 days is considered to be a time when people will find out about it, and it's going to become embarrassing. So, but in other words, if it's less than 30 days, the assumption is that the wife can live with it, that no, not everyone's going to find out about the situation with the nedarim. It's not going to be so degrading. And after 30 days, it's going to become already a little bit too much to bear. Iba yasema, shehidira kishahi arusa. The second answer of the Gemara is that she made this neder when she was merely an arusa, when she was only engaged. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Arusa mi isla mizone. So the Gemara says, but an arusa is not entitled to mizone. So she's only entitled to sustenance once she's fully married. So the Gemara says, no, shehigiyaz man velo nisu, disnan, higiyaz man velo nisu ochlos mishalov ochlos mishum. The famous Gemara, we've referenced the Gemara already several times earlier in the Masechta, which is that let's say, for example, the planned date of the wedding rolled around, and for some technical reason they couldn't get married. He was sick, she was sick, whatever it was. So the halacha is that at that point the husband is already obligated to start supporting her. So you can have theoretically a case of a woman who's technically an arusa because they're not getting married right now, but she still does warrant getting supported. Okay, then the Gemara asks, umayshna ad shloshim yom avit shliach shlichuse tfeilo avit shliach shlichuse. So again, why dafka 30 days? So the Gemara says that the assumption is that the shliach will do his shlichus, will do his, will act out his job up to 30 days. So in other words, if I appoint a trustee and I say, listen, I want you to support my wife, the assumption is he's going to do that for the next month, and after a month he's going to go take a hike and he's going to go do something else. The Iba is saying, yeah. Excellent question. We're going to get to that in a second. Yes, the Gemara is going to ask that question in a second. Very good. Okay, then the Gemara says, V'iba yaseima shehidira kishehi arusa v'nises. The second answer in the Gemara is that the woman made the neder while she was in arusa, and then she got married. So the Gemara says, nises hasavra v'kabla. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? But if she already got married, that means that she accepted the premises of these nedarim, right? If let's say she, in other words, she knew what she was getting herself into. She agreed to the marriage despite all the crazy nedarim that her husband was imposing on her. So what right now does she have to back out of that? So the Gemara says, no. The amra kisvura anisha ani yichol lekabel achshav en ani yichol lekabel. The woman can argue that I thought I was able to live a more frugal lifestyle. I thought I was able to bear, you know, not eating this fruit or not wearing that jewelry or whatever. And now I realize that I'm not able to do that. So the Gemara says, emer da amrinan hachi. The Gemara says, the Gemara pushes back and says that logic that the woman can say, "I thought I could bear it, but really I couldn't." That's not gonna fly here, because the woman knew what she was getting herself into. She knew before she agreed to marry this guy that he was going to make this neder and that neder, and that she couldn't eat that or wear that. But the Gemara says this concept that a woman can argue that I thought I was getting myself into one thing and I didn't realize what it was, and you know I was under a misapprehension. That only works when it comes to movement, when it comes to physical blemishes on a person. Let's say, for example, you know, before a couple gets married, so the husband discloses, he says to his wife, listen, I have a certain physical blemish, you know, X, Y, or Z, and the wife says, okay, I'm fine with it, and then she realizes after they get married that maybe she's not so fine with it. So the Gemara says that might be grounds that might be a legitimate tie, because there was really no way of her knowing what the blemish looked like, how much it would be problematic for her, so that's a legitimate gripe that she can have. But here, she knows what she's getting herself into. You know, the husband says very clearly, listen, if you marry me, I'm going to make a neder about this and a neder about that. She knows exactly what she's getting herself into, and she still agreed to it. So the Gemara says that can't be the reason why her nedarim are not going to be able to be overridden. It has to be based on the earlier reasons the Gemara provided. Okay, then the Gemara says atshloshim yom yabed parnas ufarnas lav shlichusei ka'avid. So this was Billy's question before, but isn't the third party, isn't the trustee simply carrying out the wishes of the husband, which is effectively another way of saying the husband himself is still providing for the wife? So how does that work if he made a neder to not benefit her? So the Gemara says no. Amar Rav Huna ba'omer kol hazan eino mafsid. The Gemara says that the husband didn't specifically appoint a trustee, as we thought in the Mishnah, but rather he made this very kind of open-ended declaration where he said, anyone who supports my wife is not going to lose out. So he's not really appointing a trustee. He's just saying, if someone steps up and supports her, I'll take care of them, you know, down the line. So the Gemara says, okay, v'chi amar hachi, lav shlichusei ka'avid, v'hasnan, mishahaya mushlach babor, v'amar kol ha'shomea kolo yichtov ged l'ishto, hare ilu yichtivu v'yitnu. The Gemara says, but is that not considered a form of shlichus? There's a Mishnah, Maseches Gittin, that says, let's say there's a guy who's thrown, he's cast in a pit, and he's not sure if he's going to get rescued, he's not sure if anyone's going to save him, so he starts to yell and scream from the pit, whoever can hear me, you should write a get for my wife. So, because he thinks, you know, in case he dies, or people don't know what happened, his wife could be an aguna, or maybe she could theoretically fall to yibum, whatever it is, so he wants to make sure that she has a get to make sure that she can that she can remarry. So the Mishnah in Gittin says that the husband's allowed to, that the person who hears this voice floating out from the pit is allowed to write the get and also hand it off to the wife. In other words, that's a legitimate grounds to write to get. So the question is, so no one, in other words, the husband in the pit didn't appoint anyone to write a get. He was just yelling and screaming for someone to write a get for his wife. And the Mishnah says that's grounds for, you know, for writing it. So why is our case any different? When the guy says, anyone who supports my wife, I'll take care of them in the future, they're not going to lose out. Why is that not considered to be a form of appointing a shlech, even though he's not literally doing that? So the Gemara says, no. Hachi hashta, hasum kamar yichtov, hacham yikamar yazun, kol hazan kamar. The Gemara says that the formulations are different. In the Mishnah in Gittin, the guy in the pit Pitt says, Yichtov, I want someone to write a get. He's giving a directive. Write a get for my wife. Whereas over here, the guy's not saying, support my wife. He's saying, anyone who supports my wife is not going to lose out. I'm going to take care of them financially. So that's very different. He's not appointing. He's not giving any sort of declarative statement that he wants someone to go do something. He's saying, if you do it, I'll take care of you in the future. So the Gemara pushes back. There's a famous Gemara, Maseches Shabbos, that says the following, that says that, let's say a fire broke out on Shabbos. This is not Bazman Hazeh. Bazman Hazeh, if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, that's considered Pikuach Nefesh, and your Mechal Shabbos, Midoraisa, to put the fire out. But in the times of the Gemara, times of the Mishnah, because people lived so far apart, the presumption was that a fire on Shabbos is only going to cause property or financial damage and not bodily damage. So technically speaking, you're really not allowed to put the fire out, at least not a Jew himself. There's a whole Parak of Masechah Shabbos about this, about how to extinguish a fire on Shabbos if it gets lit. So the Gemara says that when it comes to a fire on Shabbos, so a person can make the following declaration: anyone who extinguishes the fire will not lose out. He can turn to all the non-Jews in the vicinity. Anyone who puts out the fire is not going to lose out. So the Gemara asks, yeah.
You make it sound like it's very haphazard or whatever he falls out. The Mishnah says, Yamid.
Correct. So the Gemara is reinterpreting the Mishnah. Correct. The Gemara, right. There's no question that the literal reading of the Mishnah seems to imply that he's literally appointing a third party, but that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara reinterprets that. Right? The Gemara is assuming that he's just yelling and screaming for someone to support his wife without specifically appointing someone. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Bidaleka lema'ute mai? Lav lema'ute ki ay gavna?" So the Gemara thinks, again, the Gemara picks up on the expression from the Gemara in Shabbos that says that in the case of a fire, so Chazal allowed the person to yell and scream and say to any non-Jew in the vicinity, whoever puts out the fire is not going to lose out. So the Gemara says, why does the Gemara use that expression, bidaleka, by a fire? So the Gemara thinks that is to the exclusion of all other areas of halacha. Meaning, yes, when it comes to putting out the fire, so in that case, we allow the guy to yell and scream and say that. But in all other cases, like in the case of appointing the trustee, that's not going to fly. So the Gemara says, no, that expression, bidaleika, was only excluding other isurim in the realm of Hilchos Shabbos, since Hilchos Shabbos is so much more chumer, so much more stringent than other areas of halacha, because it involves theoretically, Mises Bezdin, if you violate Shabbos. So Chazal had to go out of their way to teach you that in this one scenario, by putting out a fire, you're allowed to yell this out. By other areas of Hilchos Shabbos, this would not be acceptable. But in other areas of halacha, like appointing a third party to support your wife, this is a totally different discussion, and this would not apply. Okay, then the Gemara says, Masiv Rabba. Hamudar hana mechaviru ve'en lo mayochal. Yelech itzel chenvani haragel atzlo v'yomar lo. Ish ploni mudar hana mimeni ve'en yodea ma'ese lo. Hu no sein lo, uva v'notel mizeh. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah from Maseches Nedarim that says the following. Let's say Reuven made a neder to not derive benefit from Shimon. And Shimon feels bad. Shimon has a lot of money, and Reuven does not. And Shimon wants to support you. He wants to help out Reuven, but Reuven made another that Shimon can that he can't derive benefit from Shimon. So what should he do? So Shimon goes to this shopkeeper, to Levi the shopkeeper, and he says, "Listen, I'm going to give you some money. When Reuven walks in, give him whatever he needs, and I'll pay for it." So the Mishnah says that's fine. He can do that. The Gemara says that the Mishnah in Adarim says that when Reuven comes in, so Reuven will take what he needs, and then Shimon will pay Levi. He'll pay him for whatever Reuven takes. So the Gemara says that scenario is permissible. That case is okay, implying that our scenario where the husband is saying anyone who supports my wife won't lose out, it sounds like that's not acceptable. So the Gemara says no. Lo mi boya ka'amar. Lo mi boya kol azane no mafsid dila alma ka'amar. Aval hai kevin derogil atzlo. Vika azil ka'amar le. Kamanda amar le. Zil hav le atdame. Kamash malan. The Gemara says no. Really, of course our case where the guy is just saying anyone who supports my wife won't lose out, of course that's permissible. Why then does the Mishnah in Nedarim list this other case of the shopkeeper? Because that case is more of a chiddush. Because one might have thought that case is more problematic, because it's almost as if you're appointing the shopkeeper to be your shliach to support Reuven. Because you always go to the shopkeeper, you're accustomed to going to him, so one could have made the argument that, well, maybe he's really your shliach to support Reuven, and that really is problematic, because Reuven made a neder to not derive benefit from Shimon. So the Gemara says, no, kamash below, that's not considered like him being your shliach, and therefore it's totally fine for Shimon to go to Levi the shopkeeper. Okay. And the Gemara says, gufa. muder hanami chaveru ve'in lo mayochal holich etzel chenvani haragel etzel ve'omer lo. Ish ploni muder hanami many ve'in yodei ma'aser lo. Who knows in lo uvav and odal mizet. So again, this is the case that we just quoted about the shopkeeper. The Gemara has similar cases. Beisu livnosu gderu likdor v'sadehu liktzor holich etzel poalin haragilin etzel ve'omer lohen. Ish ploni muder hanami many ve'in yodei ma'aser lo. Hein osinim mo'vayin ve'notlim schar mizet. So it's almost an identical case. Again, Reuven made a neder to not derive benefit from Shimon, and then Reuven needs to build some sort of a wall or a fence or whatever, but he doesn't have the money for it. So again, Shimon can go to the workers and say, "Listen, you know, build whatever Reuven needs, and I'll pay for it." Hayu mahalchin baderech ve'eni mo mayochal. No sin la'acher l'shum hatana v'halal nota v'ochel umuter ve'im ein shamacher meniach al gabi hasela o al gabi hagader va'omer harehin lufkarin l'chomi sheyachbots v'halal nota v'ochel umuter v'Rab Yosi Yosef. The Gemara has a final case about let's say for example they're traveling on the road and Reuven again made the neder to not derive benefit from Shimon, and then it turns out that Reuven has no food to eat, and Shimon wants to give him some food. So ideally, he should give the food to a third party who will then give it to Reuven. If there's no third party around, he should put it on a rock or on a fence and say that it's Hefker, and then Reuven can take it for himself. But Rabbi Yossi says that that's usher, that that's problematic. Amar Rava, my time with Rabbi Yossi. Why does Rabbi Yossi think that that's problematic? Gzeira Mishamaisa Deves Choron. The Gemara references a story that happened that's quoted in Maseches Nedarim Daf Memches. The Mishnah in Nedarim says that there was a son who made a neder to not derive benefit from his father. But the son was marrying off his own son, and he wanted his father to be at the wedding. So he wanted to come up with a way to allow the father to be there without deriving benefits. So what he did was that he basically gave all of his possessions as a gift to a third party, to some other guy. And he said, okay, now my father can come because the land doesn't belong to me anymore. So he was not deriving benefit from me. The problem was that the third party, that guy who received the land as a gift, was afraid that the father would transgress the neder that the son made. So what he did was he sanctified all the land to Hektish. He declared all the land to be Hektish. And he said, if my declaration is invalid, if I'm not able to do this, then I want the original sale to revert back to the owner. In other words, I want it to go back to the son. So that third party who received all the land as a gift essentially took himself out of the equation. Either the land is now Hekdesh, or it goes back to the original owner. So in order to avoid this type of scenario, Rabbi Yossi says that you can't pull the stunt. You can't just put an item down and give it to a third party and then have him deliver the gift because of the Gzera, because we don't want this type of scenario like what happened in Beis Choron to happen again. So that's why Rabbi Yossi thinks that's going to be problematic in this case.